Let's get into the somewhat, perhaps, depressing news of the hour as we introduce our guest.
We welcome in to the studio State Representative Harold Dutton. Quite a few things, a lot of things in the news today. Of course, the ongoing situation in Ferguson, Missouri, with the shooting of Michael Brown. Governor Rick Perry indicted.
Yeah, that's I'm sure that was a shock to him.
And then, of course, you know, it did not take place yesterday in Fifth Ward, but the open rally group, open carry, wanted to have a rally in the Fifth Ward area.
Yeah.
And so we kind of want to talk about some of those hot button topics.
Okay, our phone number is 713-390-5102, 713-390-5102. And did we say good morning, Harold?
No, I didn't say good morning either. Let me say good morning to you and Val and Brother Eugene and to the Magic 102 family. Let me say good morning and thank you for inviting me. There's so much to talk about in the news today that some of it probably is going to go to the back pages because some of the more sexy stuff is in the forefront these days.
Yeah.
What do you mean, Beyonce and Jay-Z getting a divorce?
No. Well, now that there are probably a lot of people know more about that than they know about some of the other things.
And love and hip hop. What's happening with love and hip hop?
Okay. Yeah, something on that order. Yeah, but I think I have, like most people, I've been following the events that have transpired in Ferguson, Missouri. You know, some of it is just so absolutely bizarre that it's almost unimaginable that in 2014, we would be experiencing some of these things.
Yeah, it sounds like we were back in the 1950s.
Well, no, 1914 probably more likely because here is, you know, if you evaluate this based on how it began, and some people might look at it in terms of, well, here's a police officer who decided to stop two black males walking in the street. That happens all over America. So there's lots of Fergusons around here.
Yeah.
But I think the genesis of this precedes even that event. When I looked at this situation and I thought, you know, wait a minute. 67% of the town happens to be black. And I looked at the elected officials.
67%.
Yeah, 67%. I mean, almost 70% are black. And my first question was, okay, where are the black elected officials?
Well, where are the black voters?
Yeah, and then I found out they didn't have any, so then I had to go back and started to look. Well, wait a minute now. Something is bad wrong in this community.
When, like that phrase.
Yeah. When you have that kind of numbers in terms of demographics, but you have the reverse of that in terms of elected officials, I thought this sounded like some place in Mississippi in 1950.
Yeah.
As or opposed 18, to St. Louis. 69. Yeah, 18. Right. Because I don't, and one of the things that I guess I can hope comes out of this is that somehow or another, this community wakes up.
Yeah.
But it's not unlike a lot of other communities, Dr. J, because, I mean, here we are in Harris County, for example. We have over 900,000 people who are not registered to vote in Harris County.
900,000?
900,000 people in Harris County are not registered to vote.
Man.
And that's absolutely astounding, given the fact that we went through the 60s, we went through the 50s, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed to the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, ultimately granting us, you know, freedom and then citizenship and then the right to vote. And here we are in 2014, and I would suspect that a good many of those 900,000 people are people of color. Mm-hmm. Who have chosen, for whatever reason, not to register to vote.
Yeah.
And so the makings for all of the things that have happened in Ferguson, the ingredients for that, exist throughout all of America, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And even right here at home, we have the same kind of thing. Now, having said that, I also have been absolutely astounded at the response on the part of the people who are elected officials and the law enforcement. In Ferguson, it's absolutely bizarre what they've done. In fact, in many cases, you might argue, one might argue that here's a situation that didn't require much to beyond putting gasoline on a fire to put it out just makes no sense. Mm-hmm. And essentially, that's been their response.
Yeah,
is just to add more gasoline to it. I disagreed when I listened yesterday to them talking about the curfew. I thought, well, now what does that solve? If the problem is that people are looting, then I think you ought to focus on that. But no, what they focused on was, look, we're just going to keep the streets clean and go back to the times when you had to be off the street at a certain time.
Everybody just go home and watch television.
Yeah, right. Well, those were the sundown towns.
Yeah.
And so we went back to that.
Yeah.
That was a knee-jerk, I think, response to what the problem is. But it's, and it still hadn't played out in total because the officer involved, you know, the when they started out failing to disclose who the officer was, I didn't understand what that was about. Why?
Well, they claim that you know, there were threats, but how are you going to make threats with if you don't know who the person is?
Well, wait a minute though. But I think one of the things that Barack Obama will go down in history as is the president who's received the most threats of any president in the whole history of the world.
Mm-hmm. Probably collectively.
Yes, and so that's our. Not disclosing it has nothing to do with whether you received the threats. That didn't make sense.
And then when they did disclose, they're going to muddy the issue by bringing
up an issue. Well, this has always been the tactic. I mean, in the cases that I've tried, one of the things that the law enforcement will attempt to do is to disparage the memory and character of the defendant,
individual, right.
Of the person who was shot, for example, or the person who they claim was
attacking the police.
Assaulting the police officer.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that happens,
and of course, they're feared for their life.
Or one of the things that's more frequent now is they were reaching for my gun. They were reaching for my gun. Now, how does anybody disprove that they were reaching for the gun?
Yeah.
How many black males do you know that the policemen are there and they're going to go and reach for that police officer's gun? It just makes no sense. I remember growing up in Fifth Ward when we would leave Hester House and we would walk down Solo. And I remember one particular incident where the police came and he drove by and he shouted out the N-word to us and said, get on the sidewalk. And we ignored him. Well, he went around the block, came back around, and asked which one of us had flipped him the bird. I mean, which one of us gave him a finger? And we just stood there, looked at him, and didn't say a word. And finally, he said when he came back, he was going to arrest every one of us if he saw us. I'll give you another example. I was walking downtown. I was going to the courthouse, and here I was with a suit on and a briefcase. And as I walked across the street, the light was red for me, but there were no cars coming. All of a sudden, about a block away, I saw a car turn and head in my direction. So I stopped in the middle of the street. Well, lo and behold, it turned out it was a police car. So he pulled right in front of me, let his window down, and said, PD, can't you see that light is red? At the same time he said that to me, there were some people running who run downtown from with these Vincent Elkins T-shirts on. I assume that's where they work. They ran behind his car. He never said a word to them. But here he was screaming and yelling at me, and to which, being a lawyer, to which I responded, if I'm not under arrest, you need to take your butt on. And so being the stupid officer that he was, he gave me a finger and let his window up and drove off. Now, I thought, what was that about? I mean, would he have done that if I was had the Vincent Elkins shirt on myself and it was another color?
Yeah. Well, let's see what our callers have to say. Let's go to line one and talk with Carl. You're on Sunday Morning Live with State Representative Harold Dutton. Good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Good morning.
Wonderful.
I listened to Reverend Al Sharpton about a week ago, and they were talking about some CD or something called Know Your Rights Traffic. And bottom line, dealing with the police, you need to know your rights. I mean, a lot of people do not know their rights. And now they're saying they need to do some protect me workshops and everything else because it's gotten out of hand. And all this stuff started. Well, it started way back then, but with the Tayvon Martin stuff, when they killed, you know, It's just like ever since that's been happening, it just keeps on going and going.
Well, right. Let me explain this to you though. Your rights are defined by the law, and so what I think Reverend Sharpton means is that you ought to know the law when it comes to your interaction with the police. You ought to know what the law says, because therein lies the basis for any rights that you may have. And so one of the things I've always thought is that we ought to teach the law to youngsters in schools. In fact, I'd been developing a street law curriculum to be taught in a charter school, because I think youngsters ought to be taught what the law is, as opposed to sometimes they don't have any idea what it is, and as a consequence, they sometimes aren't able to protect themselves or to assert certain rights because they simply don't know what the law is.
Okay, thank you, Carl. Appreciate your call. Let's go to line three. Jeremiah, you're on Sunday Morning Live with Harold Dutton. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to salute all of the talent and distinguished guests that we have before. Listen, I want to thank you guys for the opportunity of sharing in this open forum of ventilating. I was thinking in going forward, I want to share my condolences and prayers with all of those that are dealing with some form of death, and especially the young man that was gunned down recently and significant others alike across our country. I said that, and having said that, I like to believe that all of the men and women who are at least 30 and over, listen, we got some young soldiers who are ready. Talking about blacks and whites and Hispanics alike, those that are 30 and above, we need to encourage them, figure of speech, if you will, hold back your dollars, because a lot of our young people across America are tired of dying, and they're ready to do something. But we don't need, there's a lack of decorum, one being a criminal, one being a murderer. Now, should the young man have been judged by 9? Should it have been judged by 12? Or should it have been judged by 6? You answer that. So in going forward, we need to encourage our young people that it's not about vigilante justice in the streets. Let it play out in the courts. Even though there's a lot of outrage and enrage, we think we need to do something now, because had it been a white little girl or a little boy, I would have been equally passionate about trying to find some form of justice. But since it's been going on so long for our black people, we have taken enough.
All right,
that
Jeremiah.
That's the difference.
Okay, thanks.
Been overwhelmed.
Okay, thank you, Jeremiah, for your call.
Yeah, I agree with him, but I think one of the things we've got to do is when I talked about the 900,000 people who are not registered to vote in Harris County, the largest group of people who are not registered in that fall in that category happen to be the 18 to 35 year olds.
Right. The ones who are most likely to be victimized.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so one of the things I've been trying to do, and a number of us have been trying to do, is to get them to raise their social consciousness level such that they feel obligated to go and vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so next Saturday, for example, on August 23rd, over at Finnegan Park, we're going to be getting together to see if we can't begin to get all of the folks registered who are not registered, particularly that 18 to 35-year-old group. And also there's another group, the ex-felons.
Mm-hmm.
Ex-felons who have completed their sentence simply have not registered to vote in
and
sufficient numbers.
And some just don't realize they still can vote.
Absolutely. And that's why I think stations like Magic 102 for giving me an opportunity to talk about this, because some of them listen to the radio.
Absolutely.
And what I'm asking for them to do is to not only, you know, man up here, but also to take this message to their friends who they know are ex-felons who've completed their sentence but haven't registered.
Right. Absolutely. And excuse me, while we're on that, with regard to the open carry folks wanting to come into Fifth Ward, that was a bizarre...
Well, yeah. I talked to lots of people after this, when this started. A lot of people in my district, being from Fifth Ward and living in the Fifth Ward area myself, I went back to something my mother told me one time, you know, and it's in the, I think it's in the 26th chapter of Proverbs. Mm-hmm. And it says, never address a fool according to his folly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you may be just like him yourself. Mm-hmm. I think the people who are initiating this are obviously, in my opinion, foolish. Mm-hmm. Because there was nothing to be gained by doing this.
But attention. Being provocative.
And so one of the things we decided is that, and a number of us on the northeast side got together and decided, let's don't give them the attention. Mm-hmm. Let's just ignore them. Our message to the people in Fifth Ward was, go about your daily life as if they don't exist. If you do what you do when we have stray dogs who come in our community. Mm-hmm. We just ignore them, and if they get too many of them, we call 311. Mm-hmm. and have them come and pick them up for the most part. That's the approach that we decided to take in terms of these folks, because they're, this was clearly one time where the message and the messenger were absolutely, we were absolutely opposed to both.
Yeah.
But to challenge them meant we would elevate them or give them some status that we didn't want them to have.
And that's exactly what they were attempting to do.
Right.
Let's go to line four. Ali, you're on Sunday Morning Live with State Representative Harold Dutton of the 142nd. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, I just wanted to say that we're going to, the National Black United Front is going to be showing a film on the Honorable Marcus Garvey today. Of course, his birthday, like you said.
Where's that going to be?
2428 Sophomore at 1:00.
Okay.
I wanted to say that, along with those stray dogs, it was too many stray dogs. So that's why the people spoke up and they eliminated those stray dogs. Because we can't allow people to come in and we just ignore them because they'll do something else next. And I know that people say we got to teach our children not to do this. One guy say he was a robber and then you had a murderer. One don't have nothing to do with the other. If it is true, which I don't know is true, but if it is true that Brother Brown went in that store, it don't have anything to do with that policeman shooting him that many times, which we still don't know how many times.
And the police chief said as much. There was no relationship. Yeah. He didn't even know he was a suspect at the time.
Right. Yeah, he said as much after he released the tape.
Right. Brother,
yes. Doing that. Exactly. So he said as much, but he came back with a shot. Well, see, this is why we did it. So we can.
And well, he saw the cigars in his hand.
These people go, Brother Dutton. We got to call it what it is.
I'm not suggesting you have to let anything go.
I'm not saying you are. I'm just talking to you because you're on the radio. The policeman said those words to you because it's racism and white supremacy. Period.
Absolutely.
It ain't got nothing to do, and you're not saying this. It don't have nothing to do with our children wearing their pants down, because if you look at some of those old pictures when they were hanging us from trees, those men had on suits.
Yeah.
I had on my suit that day, too, and so you're right, it didn't matter.
Okay, Ali, got to run. Thank you so much. Let's take another call. Go to line three with Debbie. You're on Sunday Morning Live on Magic 102.1, the People's Station. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you
Good
doing?
Morning. I'm doing just fine.
Got a comment or question?
Yes, I have a comment. One day I was with my sister, and we was driving down Belford in Fundren. And it was two white females, older women, in the car in front of us. And the lady turned into the gas station and didn't put her signal light on. Therefore, my sister almost ran into the lady. So my sister blew her horn. Just so happened, it was two white cops behind us. They put their sirens on. We pulled over also in the gas station. Okay, it was two of them in the car. One of them walked on my side, one walked on my sister's side. As the gentleman was walking on my side, I had put my hand up on my forehead like, oh, my God. So he immediately said, I had an attitude, and for me to step out the car. I stepped out the car. He put me into the police car. And then he started trying to find whatever he could on me, on his computer. He couldn't find anything on me because I have no felony.
Okay, so we got a limited amount of time. So in other words, you felt you were treated unfairly in that particular situation?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I haven't even done anything.
And we know it happens all the time, Debbie. I mean, we appreciate your call. It
happens probably all the time, particularly given the fact that some of these police officers have not been sensitized to understand that certain people in certain communities. For example, one of the things when I was deposing a police officer at one time in a trial, I found out that police officers think going to the substation over in Northeast Houston was really a demotion for them.
Mm.
That they felt that when you went to Northeast, you went there to bash heads, as one police officer told me.
Mm.
And you went there because you couldn't really get into any of the other substations.
Mm.
And I just, and I found that absolutely amazing because I thought, well, wait a minute. Everybody over in Northeast Houston and Fifth Ward and Cashmere Garden, Trinity, the majority of the people over there are good people.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's not the attitude that they had in the police department.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to take a couple of more phone calls before we let you go.
All right.
Because still want to talk about Governor Rick Perry.
You're listening. Maybe he needs a lawyer.
He will. May need a lawyer. You're listening to the People's Station, Magic 102.1, streaming at myhoustonmagic.com. It's 9:26, 26 past 9 o'clock. We're Magic 102.1. And we're back with State Representative of the 142nd, Harold Dutton, talking about various issues around the state. And right now we want to talk about Rick Perry, recently indicted for
two things.
Okay.
Two felony charges. One is called abuse of official capacity,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is called
coercion of a public servant. Yeah.
I had to go back and read both
statutes.
Both statutes, because I didn't understand it either. But let me see if I can set the background real quick. In 2013, in April of 2013, the DA in Travis County was arrested for DWI. During that time, we were in legislative session, and we, of course, do the budget. The state actually funds what's called the Public Integrity Unit in the Travis County DA's office. That unit is empowered to investigate corruption on the part of officials.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially all that Public Integrity Unit does. They have about 32 employees. After she got the DWI, and after the video came out of her conduct on that DWI, there were several people in the legislature, including the governor, who demanded that she resign.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Perry went even further than that because we had already put $7.5 million in the budget for that unit. Rick Perry went a little bit further and said if she didn't resign, he was going to veto the state's contribution to that public integrity unit. Now, one of the things that this public integrity unit had been investigating at the time was the Cancer Research Institute and the grants that had been made out of that to several questionable grants that had been made. And these people had all been appointed by Rick Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was ongoing at the time. So when she didn't resign and she went and served her time in jail, I think 40-something days,
She got 45 days.
Mm-hmm. She gets out. Rick Perry goes through with his threat to veto the $7.5 million and vetoes the $7.5 million.
But there was more than just one interaction with her. I believe there was some back and forth.
Well, there was always this. There was a whole lot of conversation going on between Perry's staff, the governor's staff, and the DA staff.
Yes.
About how to resolve this and whether or not they could actually force her out of the job. One of the things that was going to be obvious is that had she simply resigned, Rick Perry would have been in a position to appoint her replacement.
Absolutely. Who would have probably been a Republican. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but the point is that
he would have had the opportunity to do that.
This was one of his programs, the cancer monies.
Right.
And there have also been some questions raised about the fund he had, which allegedly gives money to companies or incentives to companies to move to Texas.
Yeah, the economic, some folks say, we call it economic slush fund, but yeah. But it is their monies to do all those things. So what happened is the grand jury then independent prosecutor was appointed to come in and take a look at all of this matter and to present it to a grand jury. The grand jury on Friday returned an indictment against Rick Perry for the two felony charges. One, the abuse of official capacity. I'm not, you know, and as a lawyer, I must tell you, I'm in looking at the statutes, I'm not sure how the DA is going to make this statute work, considering what has happened in terms of facts. I think this is one of those cases where everybody can agree on the facts. And the only question is the application of the law.
Yeah.
And whether or not the law really prohibits the kind of conduct. Everybody agrees that the governor has the absolute right, unfettered right, to veto anything he wants to.
Right.
Right.
And it would have been no problem if he had just gone on and vetoed it, but not had a contention on her resigning.
Well, and having made the threat prior to doing it.
Yes. So that was the coercion and
that's
the abuse.
Well, that's what they're saying, except under coercion, the coercion statute, which is under 3603 of the penal code, says that a person commits an offense by coercion, he influences or attempts to influence a public servant in a specific exercise of his official power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that mean? And that's what the
12 will decide.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
it gets that far.
Yeah.
I suspect that what's going to happen, though, Jay, is that Rick Perry's lawyers will probably file a motion to dismiss.
Of course.
Arguing that the statute is inapplicable to him, or on the one hand, or too broadly imposed so that it he can't be put on notice of what the conduct is that's prohibited.
Yeah, and of course, the pundits, there's folks on one side saying it's politically motivated and it's retribution and getting even and so on and so forth. But
right.
Again, the people, the 12 folks on the jury will decide, as you state, if it gets that far.
Yes.
But if he is convicted, I suspect that it would be reversed on appeal 2 or 3 years
later.
Well,
and then the question becomes, is it what makes it a felony under the initial instance under the first felony charge was the fact that it was over $200,000, the $7.5 million. Well, that makes it a first degree felony, which is 5 to 99 years in prison.
Yeah, 109 years they can get. Wow, boy, maybe he could run for president when he got out. You know.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's too. Well, but I don't think it'll get to that far.
I don't either. I suspect that at some point this will be presented to the court for dismissal, and. My guess at this point is it'll be dismissed.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess at this point it's an embarrassment for him, and of course provides a lot of dialogue for.
Well, we thought the oops was an embarrassment.
Oh, well, this is another oops.
Well, my mom said, you know, when you make a can I use the word damn? Make a damn.
Oh, sure.
Fool, when you make a damn fool of yourself. You have to go sit down.
Well, we'll see. State Representative
thank
Harold
you.
Dutton, we want to thank you for being a part
thank
of the
you.
Program this
Thank you. I'll
this
see
Sunday
you all
morning.
Next Saturday.
That's right.
1 o'clock at Finnegan Park.
Okay. Voter
we'll
registration
have lots of people there.
Rally.
We'll have lots of people there.
Yeah, you got to come out and vote. You got to come out and register to vote. It's very important. 900,000 people in the Harris County area not registered to vote. Ask yourself, why not? Let's get registered. Let's
right.
Vote.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you all.
All right. Thank you.